Hello, and welcome to Sit Back and Listen. I love reading books to kids, so that's mainly what we'll be doing here, but that may change over time. If you happen to have the book we are reading today, feel free to go grab it and read along. Only the Best, The Exceptional Life and Fashion of Anne Lowe, by Kate Messner and Margaret E. Powell. Illustrated by Aaron K. Robinson.
Wait! You forgot to ask me what the illustrator do.
What does the illustrator do?
I know. Draws the paint. Draws the pictures.
Draws the pictures. What does the author do?
Easy. Write the words.
Writes the words or creates the story. Ooh, this is a big book. In a stately Alabama mansion, women in bright dresses twirl before a mirror. Their gowns glow like moonlight, glimmering fabrics, and the soft sheen of pearls. Across town, an orchestra begins a waltz. Candles are lit. The music swells, and billowing skirts swish over the dance floor. Here in the garden, outside a tiny dress shop, there are no candles, no music, but quiet laughter and the swish of fabrics drift out a window. The sweet smell of honeysuckle almost glimmers in the twilight. Anne plucks the blossom and traces the petals. One day, she will shape something just as perfect. Inside the shop, Anne's grandmother unrolls yards of taffeta and tulle. Anne's mother measures the fabric against her imagination. A dress begins to take shape. A fitted bodice with puff in the sleeves. We can gather the skirt like this. Another pin, a stitch, and a trim. While ladies flip through the newest French fashions, Anne gathers scraps from the floor. Bits of midnight velvet and robin's egg satin. Scraps of petal soft silk. Anne snips and tucks, gathers and folds. The fabrics bloom in her hands. They look as real as the blossoms outside. With her mother's steady hand on hers, Anne learns to cut patterns from heavy brown paper. Soon, she's made a dress for herself. But if she's to sew for a profession, there's so much more to learn. How to edge seams in delicate lace, how to finish the hem just right. Anne learns vision, precision, attention to detail. Only the best will do. Before long, she's helping with gowns. When Montgomery, Alabama is dressed in garlands and greens, there's sewing to do for the New Year's ball. Countless gowns to be assembled, fitted and hemmed. But Anne's mother falls ill. She grows sicker, and then Anne is left alone. No steady hands to guide her, no arms to hold her tight. All that remains is a garden of memories, the craft her mother taught her, and piles of hard work. There's no space for grief in a room filled with unfinished dresses. It's nearly New Year's Eve. The ladies are fretting. Will their gowns be finished on time? Anne folds up her feelings and tucks away her tears. She works day and night, the way her mother taught her. Only the best will do. Measure, snip, pin up the hems, thread the needle, pull the stitch tight, embroider the last lovely bloom. The dresses are finished on time. Everything is just right, except the empty room. The next year is long and lonely, but with autumn comes a new opportunity. Anne packs up her sewing bag and boards a train to Florida to sew for a wealthy family whose daughter must have the best. Anne orders French silk in the shadow of palm trees. She gathers and drapes, pins and cuts, and pulls each tiny stitch tight. She measures her work against her mother's sweet memory. Each gown will be custom made, one of a kind. Before long, all of Tampa knows Anne's name. Her gowns sparkle with glass and shimmer with pearls. The silk flowers look as if they might wilt by the end of the night. Extraordinary. Without one of Anne's dresses, a lady might as well stay home. Her gowns are the talk of every ball. But Anne wants to see her creations in fashion magazines. She knows she has more to learn. Within a year, she saves enough money to enroll in a top French design course at the St. Taylor School in Manhattan. Anne is ready for New York. But New York isn't ready for Anne. It's 1917, and American society is segregated by race. The school has never had a black student. White women refuse to sew beside her, sharing machines they work through their lessons. Anne is moved to a room by herself. Behind the closed door, she sits straight and tall. A careful snip, a delicate stitch, a garden burst into bloom. Anne's silk roses look like they would fool a bee. She hums through her lessons, so talented that the other students come to learn from her. She completes the course with honors, best in her class. She's expected nothing less for herself. Now Anne has learned all that she needs to open a shop of her own. She returns to Tampa, making dresses for her old clients. She sews and saves more until she can open a new shop in her own home. She hires neighborhood women, teaches them her craft, sketching designs, stitching on beads, painting pansies on chiffon. Here's how to ruffle silk into carnations. Here's how to fold tulle into pussy willow buds. But eventually, Tampa feels too small for Anne. She still longs to make dresses for New York's highest society. Anne goes back to Manhattan and opens a little shop of her own. But times are tough. Few people have money for gowns, and business never blooms. Anne searches for work instead. She visits a block with the finest boutiques, but every door is closed. The shop owners can't imagine that a black woman designs the most beautiful dresses in town. But Anne knows that her gowns belong on fancy Madison Avenue. She picks out the most respected dress shop in all of Manhattan and asks for a job. The answer is no. Anne goes home to her Harlem apartment, unrolls a length of chiffon, and measures the silk against her imagination. She sews a gown, her very best work, with a skirt that swishes and swirls. She snips and tucks and gathers and hems. She pulls each tiny stitch tight. Then she marches back to the store and offers to work for free until she's proved her worth. The shopkeeper puts Anne's dress in the window and it sells that very same day. Anne has the job. In the back room, she orders rows of gleaming satin, yards of the sheerest tulle. She stitches pink roses to embellish the hem. Their petals are soft as dew. She hand paints flowers down the length of a skirt. Only the best is what she'll offer the millionaires and movie stars who come to this shop. But Anne's name is missing from the dress labels. Her employers take all the credit. Still, customers seek her out. No one's work is as perfect as Anne's. So when one of the most dazzling families has a wedding planned, Anne is the only choice. This is the wedding of the year. The handsome young senator, John F. Kennedy, is engaged to Mary Jacqueline Bouvier. The bride and her bridesmaids need gowns, and Anne will design them all. There are weeks of meetings and sketching, designing and draping, so many dresses to make. 2 months to the wedding, the fabric arrives. There are hundreds of yards of creamy French taffeta to fold and turn and sew. Only the best will do. 1 month ago, the bride's final fitting. Tuck a bit here and stitch a bit there. Does she love it? Is she happy? Will the dresses be ready in time? A week to the wedding, just a few small jobs left. The candy pink sashes and white satin caps. Anne arrives early and unlocks the door, eager to put the finishing touches on the wedding party's gown. No! A leak from the ceiling has flooded the workroom. Dirty water stains the skirts and color beads from the sashes. Weeks of work wasted. So many gowns ruined. How can the wedding go on? With just days left, repairs feel impossible, but Anne gathers her weeping seamstresses. We've got to stop all this crying and get this place cleaned up. There's no space for tears in a room full of unfinished dresses. Anne has promised to deliver the best of the best. She has worked under deadlines before, and this time she's not alone. Order more taffeta. Quickly now, quickly! Restitch this bodice. Replace this stained skirt. Everyone sew day and night and all week long. Will the dresses be finished on time? Yes! They dazzle, they glimmer, and Anne won't let them out of her sight. Normally, her assistant would take the gowns to the bride, but Anne wants to meet the senator. She'll make this delivery herself. These gowns are stunning, the best of the best, fit for a queen and her court. Anne steps up to the mansion door with pride. She knocks, a butler answers. Use the back door, he says, as if she's just a servant. The back door? Anne has measured and snipped and pinned and cut, pulling each tiny stitch tight. She is one of the most talented designers in all of New York. She is not just anything. The back door? No, no. Anne stands up tall and says, then would you please tell the senator and Miss Bouvier that there will be no wedding today because I'm taking the dresses back with me. The butler steps aside and walks in with the dresses, and the fairy tale wedding begins. Her gowns swirl and twirl all night long. Anne is there too, watching them shine. But she doesn't rest for long. There are more dresses to design. Now Anne works in a new salon on Madison Avenue. She keeps a book of client sizes, heights and necklines and waist, but measures her own work against the gowns in her dreams. Fabric the color of new leaves in April, skirts that flare out like upside down blossoms. Only the best will do. One more touch. Add the flowers. With a roll of the fingertips, silk curves into perfect petals. Now a cascade of rose blossoms will gleam in the light as the skirt swishes over the floor. And the name on the label is the name over the door. Anne Lowe. Author's note. Anne Lowe was born into a family of women with a gift for sewing. Her grandmother, Georgia Cole, was enslaved as a seamstress on a plantation in Alabama. According to family history, when Georgia's husband, a free black carpenter, bought her freedom, she opened her own dress shop. Georgia taught her daughter, Janie, to sew stylish ball gowns for society ladies, while her granddaughter, Anne, made fabric flowers from the scraps. The seeds of Anne's incredible career were planted in those early days as she learned alongside her mother and grandmother. About a year after Anne's mother died, Anne was working in a department store when a healthy Florida woman named Josephine Lee saw her in the store window. She admired Anne's homemade dress and invited her to Tampa to sew for her family. Anne moved in with the Lee family, sewing sparkling gowns for the older daughters and doll dresses for the youngest. It was a chance to make all of the lovely gowns I'd always dreamed of, Anne said. There were many seamstresses in town, but Miss Lee liked to tell their neighbors, nobody in Tampa can sew like Annie. Soon Anne was sewing gowns after dazzling gown for Tampa's High Society Gasparilla Festival. If you didn't have a Gasparilla gown by Annie, you might as well stay home, one of her clients said. Fashion design was practically Anne's whole life. She did get married as a teenager, though, and had a son, Arthur, who went with her when she moved to Tampa. He's the little boy you see in the train scene. But her husband stayed behind, and their marriage didn't last. Anne's sense was that he knew her work would always come first, and he wouldn't accept that. She had to choose between him and the dresses. She chose the dresses. Once Anne established herself in New York City, she was able to earn a living during the hard times of the Great Depression and World War II by working for a number of different dress salons. She did her very best on every order, even though the other designers got the credit. By 1950, Anne was ready to open the kind of salon she'd always dreamed of, Anne Lowe Gowns, on stylish Madison Avenue. She and her team of seamstresses sewed thousands of dresses for society families with names like Rockefeller, Roosevelt, and Vanderbilt, some of the wealthiest, most well-known families in America. I love my clothes, and I'm particular about who wears them, Anne said. Many of Anne's dresses were for debutantes, young women from wealthy families making their first formal appearances at extravagant balls. American society was still segregated by the race and class then, so Anne was never invited, but she loved hearing later how her dresses were admired. "I'd like to hear about it, the oohs and ahs as they come into the ballroom," she said. "Like when someone tells me the Anne Lowe dresses were doing all of the dancing at the Cotillion last night. That's what I like to hear." Anne used expensive fabrics from Paris and frosted her gowns with thousands of tiny glass beads to make them sparkle. Sometimes she didn't charge enough to cover expenses, so she never got rich from her brilliant designs. Her joy was in making, not the money. Her granddaughter said, Anne's granddaughter remembered her walking proudly through the streets of Harlem with perfect posture and the most stylish clothes in town. "I want you to always walk with your head up," Anne told her granddaughter. "You hold your head up high." When Anne died in 1981, she left behind a legacy of beauty. Her elite dresses had crossed the stage at the Academy Awards, graced the pages of Vogue, and dazzled audiences at glamorous fashion shows. Today, some of those high society gowns are in the collection of New York Metropolitan's Museum of Art and the Smithsonian's National Museum of African American History and Culture. It's a wonderful place to visit if you'd like to see Anne's beautiful gowns and her signature fabric flowers in person. The end.
Finally!
Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening.
See you next time.
See you next time.
Bye.
Bye.